Welcome, everybody, to the health show that knows Health Talk Radio, brought to you by the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine, only on KFAR 660 AM, broadcasting to Fairbanks and beyond. So sit back, relax, and prevent a heart attack. Here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper, your guide to better health.
Good afternoon, Fairbanks, and welcome to Health Talk. My name is Dr. Scott Looper, and I'm your host today as we talk about health, how to get it, and how to keep it. Today, Jeff Hull is our guest. Jeff is a health coach and a personal trainer, and today we're talking about really food and psychology. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So, Jeff, tell us about this food and psychology thing, because, you know, we know that food has an effect on our mood. I mean, chocolate makes you fall in love, right? And stuff like that. But it's a lot more than that, right? Tell us more.
Yeah. So really, food psychology is all about how the food we eat then corresponds with the way we feel and the way we think and the things that we do as far as our behaviors, our actions. For example, if I eat a biscuit, I might feel a little brain fog. I might feel
later,
exactly.
Yeah, initially it's just delicious.
Right, yeah. Right?
Especially
yeah.
We have some good sausage gravy on it. Except for an hour later, boy, I'm tired, right? Mm-hmm. You get slump.
Yep, you get that slump in your energy level. You might want to take a nap. And, you know, like I said, energy level's low. You're not stable. And that's what we focus on as far as nutritional psychology to help elevate mood and energy together.
So I used to never had a problem as a kid. I could eat anything. But as I got older, I got more and more sensitive to things like that. It was just weird. It's weird how my body doesn't work right. I think probably a lot of people listening have that same problem. Stuff you could just tolerate when you're a kid. You could eat, you know, a whole bowl of M&Ms and not even blink an eye. And now I can't hardly eat anything that's sugary. It just whacks me out. It jacks me up and then drops me down, a short time later. The worst thing that I came across as this was developing in my 20s, this is 30 years ago, was bagels. Bagels are just, they were just horrible because I'd eat a bagel and I would be so sleepy. My kids would say, they notice the pattern. They'd say, "Daddy, don't eat that. We want to do something today."
Yeah.
And donuts. My theory was it was the hole in the center was the thing was getting to me. Right? Okay. Anything that had a hole in it, probably not.
It's not as holy as they seem, huh?
Wheat and sugar together is really what it is. It jack my blood sugars up, and then they come crashing down. Up's fine. Up feels good. It's the down that it makes me tired. It makes us tired, right? We all get tired.
Right. Yeah, that's generally what happens with just about anybody. We especially in the mornings, we see this where if you're on the go a lot, people will want to just like run through a coffee stand and grab, you know, a mocha frappuccino or some type of sugary coffee that has cream in it, and then maybe like a biscuit or a donut or like a bagel or something like that. And then, you know, by the time they get to work, they feel great. But then after about, you know, 45 minutes to an hour being at work, then they're wanting to take that nap.
Yeah. And or get more coffee or a rock star or something like that.
Yeah.
And fight that slump off with caffeine or something.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, so the psychology goes up and down and up and down and up and down. Your energy goes up and down and up and down and up and down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as your energy goes up and down, so does your mood. So typically when we have those high sugary beverages or high carbohydrated meals, such as like a donut, like you were saying, we'll see our mood elevate. We're happy. Yeah, we have lots of chemicals in our brain that, like dopamine and serotonin, that are good chemicals that allow us to be happy. And then all of a sudden, it slows down, right? And so when it slows down, our mood goes down. We might be a little bit more irritable. You might be hangry, you know, is what people are saying these days.
Yeah. It might be, though likely would be, I'd say. That's my experience with this. So, Jeff, what do you do about it? How do you treat it? How do you prevent it?
So what we focus on is the blood sugar adrenal axis. So, and that's called the BSAA. What that does is keeping your blood sugar stable throughout the day, even. And this does range. It's varied from person to person. Everyone has different levels they need to shoot for, of course. And so what that looks like is if you were to look at a graph, okay, you see this stable line going straight across the graph. in the morning, you have that donut and coffee. And then your blood sugar spikes.
Shoot.
Yeah, it shoots straight up to the top. It goes above that line that we're trying to hit, that stable blood sugar line. And then maybe an hour goes by, and then it drops down. Your body releases a hormone called insulin. And every time your body releases insulin, which insulin's used to try to bring your blood sugar back to normal, every time it releases too much and it drops, so then your body goes beneath the blood sugar axis line, and then you go for that sugary beverage again or something quick.
So insulin, your blood sugars go up, your body releases insulin. If your blood sugars go up high, then your body releases lots of insulin, and that insulin does what it's designed to do, which is to take that extra sugar and put it into storage, right? Or put it into muscles so it'll burn or whatever. It gets it out of your bloodstream, and it does so effectively and such a good job that not only does your blood sugars come down to normal, it comes down below normal. Mm-hmm. Now you're tired, now you got brain fog, now you're irritable if that's what's going on for you, or just don't feel yourself, you don't feel right.
Yeah,
and it turns out not to be any kind of problem in, your pleasantness and your moral character. I'm sure people are just lovely, except for your blood sugars are running so low, your brain can't work right.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't function right.
Yeah.
Yeah, bottom line, doesn't function right. Okay, so that's the coffee and donut lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah. Right? So the alternative is what?
So the alternative is to have a balance of healthy fats, so like avocados, nuts, and seeds, for example, and then a combination of healthy proteins and complex carbohydrates, so carbohydrates that are whole grain or fruits and vegetables.
Slow carbs, in other words.
Exactly.
Ones that don't turn into sugar very quickly at all. They give their sugar up slowly, so it trickles into your bloodstream instead of floods your bloodstream. And if the blood sugars never get that high to begin with, then your body doesn't have to release very much insulin, so it doesn't drive it down very far. So you're hovering over that line for the whole day, right, if you do it right?
Right. Yep, exactly.
So basically you got to have that kind of meal, some good fats and some good protein and some slow carbs really all the way through the day.
Yep.
And just live like that.
That's right.
Where does pizza fit into this now?
Those are on cheat days. When you have a weekend, you can sleep the day away.
So it turns out that all kidding aside, you can actually really, truly feel good on the diet that you're talking about. In fact, you'll feel better. That's what most of the time when I work with people and I ask them, how do you like the diet? They say, because we do the same thing, because it's what you can do to help people stabilize their mood. They say, I feel better.
Yeah.
I feel better. I really do. I feel better. I got more energy. Mm-hmm. I don't get that slump in the afternoon. I ask people, how's your energy? Well, it's not so good. How is it in the afternoon? That's the one it says that it's lowest. And the other thing that I see, I don't know if you see it, is people get this weird surge right before bed.
Oh, yeah.
It just, their energy, suddenly they get so tired the whole day at 9 o'clock, bam, now they're ready to get up and do something.
Uh-huh.
So, Jeff, what's that all about?
So that could be a number of things. One, cortisol plays a role in this. So cortisol spikes sometimes right before we go to bed when really we don't want it to. And a few ways you can prevent that from happening is, one, having time to relax, maybe with a nice bubble bath, or going for a nice little leisure walk, or maybe even exercising 2-3 hours prior to bed, to kind of help your body regulate cortisol and know that it's rest time. Another way is you can find some cortisol manager through various different supplement stores and things like that.
That's a supplement people take, yeah.
That is a supplement, yes.
And it'll blunt the cortisol spike that people get at night, usually. Mm-hmm. That's usually when it's worse. It comes up in the evening, but a lot of times what will happen is this thing where your blood sugars go up and down the whole day, it doesn't quit.
Right.
It does it at night, too.
Yep.
And when it goes down, your body doesn't like it. Your brain doesn't like it. It releases cortisol to get your blood sugars back up again. Mm-hmm. That's how your body gets blood sugar back up.
Yep.
And boom, you're awake, 3 o'clock in the morning. It's like, okay, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I am perfectly awake.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, because the blood sugars go up and down. And I thought, when I first learned this, I thought, oh, this is easy enough to solve. All you need to do is have people eat something before they go to bed. Nope.
Right, yeah.
Doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Literally doesn't work. Yeah. Turns out the way to treat it is to have somebody have a healthy breakfast 2 days ago. and every other meal between healthy, and then you get people's blood sugars balancing.
Right.
Jeff, this is what you do.
Yep.
You're taking people through this process. So the theory of this is helpful, but what I really want to know is how do you actually do it with real people? Like, what do you talk about? What do you say? But not quite yet. Jeff, let's take a break, and we're going to come back and learn how the practical science of how to keep your mood balanced.
Don't you dare touch that dial. More Health Talk will be back in a moment. Can you imagine some of the weird questions a doctor receives? Here are some examples that we've gotten. Is there a pill so I can have a girl? I want to find out about my son's yin and yang. I'm allergic to cats. I'm getting a cat. Can I get a vaccination for that? Unfortunately, we can't answer all of your questions, but we can sure answer most of them. So give us your best shot and submit your inquiries to acnm.marketing@gmail.com or send them to our Facebook page. The best questions get answered by Dr. Scott Looper right here on Health Talk Radio. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Welcome back to the conversation here on Health Talk Radio, presented by the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine. Here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
You can't hardly find better groove anywhere on the radio than it Health Talk. Seriously. All right. Welcome back to Health Talk. We're here with Jeff Hull today. We're talking about nutritional psychology, basically the effect of nutrition on psychology. So, Jeff, we kind of barely scratched the surface of this thing. We talked about blood sugar balancing as being important. There's so much more that could be said. We only got a half an hour. But what I want to do is I want to go into the practical application of this. So tell us, like, if somebody came to see you, what would you do? Walk us through the process.
Yeah, so a typical day in my shoes is first I send all of my patients or clients, even new patients, an intake form. And it's has numerous questions that allow me to assess, you know, if there's any blood sugar related problems, if, you know, you might have some amino acid therapy that might need to take place, which, you know, like you said, we only have 30 minutes, can't get too far into it. But it's an extensive questionnaire that allows me to get to know you before I even meet you.
Yeah.
And then when, you know, you come into my office, we sit down, and it's kind of just a leisure talk. I just ask you, you know, the past 2 days, what you've eaten. A typical 2 days in your shoes of nutrition. You know, and a lot of people's concern when they see me are, you know, weight loss is one of them, along with mood. So it's kind of a combination. So I'll ask the general weight loss questions, you know, if you've tried any specific diets in the past, any supplements or shakes you may have taken, just to kind of know if you could possibly be, you know, struggling from some metabolic disorder where you've damaged your metabolism, basically is what that is. So you could have a slower metabolism. And then that allows
me to... So starving turns out to slows your metabolism, right?
That is correct.
Which is otherwise known as dieting.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, and so that leads me... So one of the things that I always teach and tell my clients, and if any are listening, they'll know, is that weight loss and mood regulation is not a calories in, calories out equation. It is, it's a food equation. It's honestly, that's what it is. It's a metabolism equation. Sorry. And so.
Okay, wait, let me resonate with that.
Yep.
Jeff, you're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And it blew me away when I learned that. I thought it really was calories in and calories out. And come on, the math is inescapable, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way around it. Turns out it's literally not true.
Right.
Actually and truly, not true.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that there's some people who can eat tons of calories and they don't have any problem with weight. Other people eat so little calories and they gain weight.
Exactly.
It's not calories in and calories out. It doesn't work that way. It's hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Hormones are way more important. They're really what dictate whether we gain weight or we lose weight more than anything, short of actually starving. But if you're actually starving, your body clicks into this incredible a saving mode,
right,
where you it fights tooth and nail not to lose anything. I mean, you could starve yourself into submission, but as soon as you eat one thing, bam, you're going to gain that weight back and some.
Yep.
It happens time and time again.
Exactly.
The world's full of people. 90% of people on diets in the long run fail. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So kind of going a little deeper into that, the thing I go over, a lot of people want to try the newest thing. I want to try keto. I want to try intermittent fasting. So they typically come to me with this plan in their head. And so my first response is, don't worry about the calories. Don't even look at your calories. And people typically get wide-eyed and they're like, well, that's not happening. I have to see how many calories I'm eating, because that's what we've been accustomed to. That's what we've been taught. So some of my work is giving you behavior modification tactics and verbal cues to help you through this process of not counting your calories, not weighing yourself every day is something I see a lot of as well. So, teaching you different ways to take a different route in experiencing your daily lifestyle, basically. And so as far as, like you were saying, with your body's always wanting to hold on to it, and before you eat anything, then you'll go crazy. We always say, let's use intermittent fasting for an example. Intermittent fasting, a lot of people want to try it because they see friends that are so successful with it. But intermittent fasting is not for everybody. Yes, it does work.
So intermittent fasting means you don't eat for periods of time, then you eat a little bit. Normally you eat from 2 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
You have a limited 4-hour window that you eat, and then otherwise you don't eat at all.
Yes, yeah. That's correct. And so what happens is, your body, when you try to shift over to that, your body will hold on to fat and even store fat, because it's saying, let's use you for an example, if Scott's not going to feed me and give me the energy that I need, I'm going to store and save energy, fat, for later, so I can live and prosper.
There's some people who have a knack for this.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to come from ancestors that starved a lot.
Yeah.
Native Americans are particularly good at this.
Mm-hmm.
The Irish,
yep,
are particularly good at this. A lot of starving was going on in Ireland. Northern mm-hmm. Europeans in general are actually pretty good at taking what few calories you have and pack it into fat.
Right.
Normal people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I know we got a little off track as far as what it looks like when you come and see me. So kind of get back onto that. So after I ask you your initial questions, just kind of, what you've done in the past as far as diet, then I start kind of diagnosing what could possibly be the problem here. And then giving you an ideal goal to meet. So how much fat you should eat in a day, how much carbs and protein you should eat. That's all different for everybody. Everybody's different. And so that means everybody's calories and portions of food sizes are going to be different based off activity level, height, and weight. And so that's based around this calculation that I make called the TDEE, total daily energy expenditure. How much energy you expel in a day, basically, is what that is. And so I gear that around how much food you need, how much energy you need to live your life. And then from there, that's when we start seeing the weight loss, especially when I tell people not to worry about the calories. I have patients that eat 2,500 calories, even close to 3,000 calories a day, and are still losing 5 to 10 pounds a month. So it's not about the calories at all.
Yeah. So, Jeff, in my experience with this diet, or the diets in general, is or just not life. Forget the diets. Is life. Mm-hmm. Is in order for me personally to be reasonably thin, I'm not perfectly thin by any means, and fit, is I need to be hungry.
Yeah.
I haven't figured out how to do it without being hungry. I mean, at some point I need to experience hunger. What's your experience with that? What's your thoughts on that?
So experiencing hunger is a good thing, actually. You should experience hunger at some point. And this kind of, goes back to our ancestors. We used to be in this hunter-gatherer stages of our lives, a long time ago, where you might not have eaten in a day. You found whatever whatever you ate is what you found walking around looking for food. So berries, fruits, vegetables on the ground.
Seeds,
nuts.
Little critters.
Exactly. Bugs. Yeah. Our Leaves. Ancestors ate bugs. Yeah. And if they found an animal, maybe a deer or something like that, and they were able to catch it and use that for sustainable meat. Not only did they just eat the meat, what a lot of people miss is they ate the whole animal from nose to tail. And so I could dive into a whole nother 30 minutes with you on
bones,
that.
Cracking bones, right?
Exactly.
Getting the marrow out of them, yeah.
Yeah, cracking the bones, getting the marrow, eating the thyroid gland, eating the liver, you know, getting all those nutrients from that. That's how our ancestors and lived. And that's one of the reasons I have this theory about, you know, the longevity process of our ancestors, why they lived so long and we're not living that long, could be because of that. Because they experienced that hunger. They experienced that, those like intermittent fasting stages that we went over earlier.
That's true. They've done the research on this one. If you literally are hungry and you don't starving to death, but you're hungry, you live longer, at least if you're a fruit fly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Or a mouse or a rat or nearly everything they've looked at, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do this research on humans because they live so long, right?
Right.
You run out of funding eventually. So you have to use something that turns their lifespan over. But when they look at it, the animals that spend part of their time hungry live longer.
That's right.
Yeah, our systems run better. All right, let's go ahead and take a break right now. When we come back with more Health Talk, we're going to learn how to keep happy.
Don't you dare touch that dial. More Health Talk will be back in a moment. Do you get headaches? Do you have pain? Well, look no further than licensed acupuncturist Matt Preeby. Matt is new to the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine and looking to fill up his schedule, but that won't be for long because Matt Preeby is the real deal. So call the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine at 907-452-3600 and schedule your appointment today. Welcome back to the conversation here on Health Talk Radio, presented by the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine. Here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
I like that. That's good.
Be still in my heart. Anyways, welcome back to Health Talk. We're here with Jeff Hull, and we're talking about nutritional psychology. So, Jeff, I don't want to forget this part of it, so let's just do it right now. Mm-hmm. So you're doing a class. You're teaching people how to eat and how to live in order to maximize your chances of having good, solid brain chemistry and happiness and health, right? So tell us about the class.
Yes. So I am doing a 5-part series. It's called The Truth About Food. And what I'm going to be discussing is each Sunday in June, I'm going to be going over the different food groups, basically. Proteins, carbohydrates, sugars, fats, and I'm adding dairy. I did this event as a 4-part series not too long ago in the winter and only covered the proteins, carbohydrates, sugars, and fats. And people were asking a lot about dairy, so I decided to do it again and add the dairy. So what I'm going to do is take you through each one of those sections of food and tell you the truth about it, what we have been led to believe about it, like dairy, for example. Should we eat dairy? Is it nutritious for us? If so, what parts of the dairy are nutritious for us? So give you an overview of what exactly is good about these nutrients and then tell you where science has gone wrong and where science has improved in these categories as well, and then tell you what you can do now to promote a healthier lifestyle by either eliminating or adding or, you know, increasing the amount of these foods that you
Boy, things sure have changed. Well, I remember when I was a kid and a teenager and a young adult, I learned all kinds of things about the diet that just turns out to be absolutely wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Well, things like eggs are bad for you. They're high in cholesterol, so they raise your cholesterol up. Wrong.
Right.
Right? And that margarine is a bit more healthy than butter. Wrong. Right? Yeah. I mean, there's so many things. Turns out just literally are not true. Turns out margarine, depends on what kind of margarine is. There's actually some fairly decent, healthy margarines, but most of the stuff is bad.
Exactly, yeah. And so those are the things I'm going to be discussing. And even, you know, going into this, even, you know, as far as protein goes, you know, a lot of people ask me, is red meat bad for me? Is red meat going to give me cancer?
No.
And so I'm going to, exactly.
Maybe.
Well, it depends. The research shows that if you eat too much red meat.
Too much.
Exactly.
Too much.
But then what happens is the media exposes just red meat causes cancer. They don't actually dive into what the research did. For example, real quick before we have to get off of here, the research study actually shows that they fed individuals 350 to 450 grams of protein a day of red meat, mostly from lunch meats, actually, and bacon and things like that, yeah. Processed meats, and they had a 1% increase of this type of prostate cancer. And so for me, I'm like, well, I would take the 1% risk to eat 400 grams of bacon. Like, you know? but at the
it's
same
time. It's a risk-benefit assessment, right?
Right. But at the same time, it's like who in their, you know, in their daily living eats 350 to 450 grams of protein? Not that many people. Not even elite athletes. Olympians eat that much protein. So that research doesn't say, you know, red meat causes cancer. That research says too much red meat is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are the things I'll be discussing.
Yeah. Okay. So good to get to the truth of it. All right. Yeah. So let's talk about, we go slow. We still got some time here. Let's talk about the effect of protein on our mood, particularly amino acids. Jeff, you know a lot about this. Tell us something about it.
Yeah. So protein, let's say meat, for example, has BCAAs. Those are your, like you said, branched chain amino acids. A very famous branched chain amino acid is L-tryptophan. A lot of people hear about this one in at Thanksgiving time, and you know, when they eat turkey, they say, "Oh, I fell asleep because I had turkey because I have, you know, L-tryptophan." But there's this whole process behind that, right? So L-tryptophan has this long process that actually converts, into 5-HTP, and then that goes into serotonin. And then serotonin gets converted into melatonin. And so that's where you kind of feel that lull, right? So that's where, you know, you might feel that effect if you have too much tryptophan. And so that's one of the proteins, you know, you want to make sure you have high amounts of that if you're experiencing those cortisol levels where you can't fall asleep at night.
Yeah, I don't think it's a tryptophan at all. I think it's the mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yeah.
That's driving or making me tired.
Right, and that's part of it. That's the mass part of it. That's the big picture part of it. And so the tryptophan has a little effect. Now, protein in general is actually going to help stabilize your blood sugar and actually allow you to be satiated, feeling fuller for longer periods of time throughout the day. So that's why I encourage people to eat snacks between meals that are higher in protein to carry them through the day.
Okay, and then also the protein eventually gets converted into neurotransmitters that help us be healthy and well-adjusted.
Yeah, it actually helps protect and stabilize your neurotransmitters. Yeah.
So there's lots of ways to affect neurotransmitters, mostly the stuff that drug companies affect the reuptake of those neurotransmitters.
Yep.
But they don't actually affect the manufacturer of those neurotransmitters. And it turns out if you keep the reuptake low, that is, force more of the amino acids or the neurotransmitters specifically, to stay between the neurons where you can feel them, when get your mood up. Mm-hmm. It works well to begin with, but eventually what happens is your body gets used to it and the manufacturer levels go down and overall your numbers go down, and that is of the neurotransmitters, and they don't work as well in the long run. Mostly they got a lifespan of, what, 2-3 years. I mean, it's still 2-3 years of having your mood up, taking a pill, but you can't stay on it forever.
Exactly.
Eventually, you're going to have to figure out how to be healthy.
Right. Exactly.
Really, if you want to keep your mood up. Jeff, thank you for doing what you do. I appreciate it. Thank you for the class that you're teaching. How do people get signed up for it?
Yeah, so you can call me directly. My phone number is 903-314-0766. You just tell me you want to sign up for the class, and I get you taken care of. The class is $40 per session, or if you buy all five classes up front, it's $150. So that actually saves you about $10 per class.
Excellent. Jeff, thank you again. Thank you so much for doing what you do. Yeah. Also, I want to thank our engineer, Mike Zuniga, who pushes all the right buttons. Let you guys know this has been Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Looper, Medical Director of the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine, where we find the why to your illness, we treat the cause, and we help you to live the cure. Come see us.
Thank you very much for listening to Health Talk Radio. This show is sponsored by the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine. who you can call at 907-452-3600. To catch up with our previous episodes, log on to www.AlaskaCenterForNaturalMedicine.com. Our motto is clear: find the why, treat the cause, live the cure.